Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. So we are now well into season two, and I hope that you are enjoying it as much as I'm enjoying making it. I really can't thank you enough for the support so far, for all the subscriptions and the reviews and the shares and the likes and the comments. Means the world. I've also signed up to Patreon, and I will pop the link in the episode details. It's just patreon.com/Caroline Foran. Now, as I said before, it's not a requirement, it's just an option, and it makes a huge difference. If you want, you can also follow me on Instagram at Caroline Foran, where I talk about anxiety on the daily. And this week I am joined by comedian Des Bishop. So you know him well, I'm sure, and you've been to his comedy gigs all over the world, and you might be a follower of his own podcast called The Shift. So Des and I sat down to record a conversation for his podcast originally because he wanted to understand more about his experience of anxiety, and he figured I might be able to help. And then we just decided to do it for both of our podcasts. So in this episode, we dig into the probable roots of his anxiety as a child, his relationship with his mom, who he now realizes was struggling probably with anxiety for her whole life without having ever identified it as such, how anxiety manifested for him over the years, and the common mind traps associated with anxiety that he finds himself falling into this day, and how he might be able to better manage those. So I really appreciate how open and honest Des was willing to be with me. We had a great conversation and definitely a fair few laughs as well. And I really hope that you get something from this too. So thank you so much.
So you're on my podcast. I'm on your podcast.
Yeah. How are we going to do this?
So I'm using you.
Right. But I'm using you too.
Yes. You're using me for an episode, but I'm using you in the sense that, so let me explain my scenario and then you can take over.
Right.
Ages ago, which I know that you listened to, I had said something about anxiety on my own podcast, which actually is a podcast I hadn't really been keeping up. But very recently, I was driving down to, I was driving somewhere to do a show with my co-host of The Shift, Katie. And I said, let's talk about anxiety. And we did like an episode about anxiety. But the whole time I was talking, both on the Des Bishop podcast and when I was talking to Katie, I realized that I'm talking about all these things about what I think mm-hmm. is anxiety, mm-hmm. but I've never actually spoken to anybody about, you know, like, I don't know if you say officially having anxiety.
Oh, it's a weird one. I would sort of move away from, I don't like when people say, oh, I've been diagnosed or I have a disorder, or put it, I, for me, anxiety is a stress response that we all have. And I always say this, and it can flare up and you can, for whatever reason, be going through a phase where you're experiencing a lot of it, or you can be prone to sort of suffering from it. But I feel like if you say, oh, I have this generalized anxiety disorder, you kind of accept it as a sentencing that you can never do anything about. And right. I think you really can do something about it.
Yeah. So, you know, as you know, because you listen to the Des Bishop podcast.
Yeah.
The first time I actually thought, oh my God, I actually might suffer from that, was because I had a very stressful situation at making a TV show in 2016. And I was like almost crippled with these particular feelings, like in mm-hmm. my legs, and just like, and they weren't unfamiliar feelings, by the way, but they were just so obvious that I Googled like a feeling of acid in your legs, or I Googled something like my legs just...
The worst thing you can do is Google it.
Yeah, but like I just put in whatever I was feeling at the time, which was just like an inescapable feeling of something in my legs. Mm-hmm. And all these articles about anxiety came up. Mm. And I was like, holy shit. I didn't even...
That's rare. I haven't met many people who also have had that feeling in your muscles. It's kind of like the adrenaline and the cortisol that you were producing in order to cope has nowhere to go. So it kind of like calcifies in your body and your legs. So I would wake up every morning and have these aches and pains. It was as if I had like a horrendous flu and I couldn't do anything about it until I just sort of shook it off and got up and maybe had a bath or moved around. But so few people ever report that. So that you must have been actually probably quite bad without identifying it as anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't realize that that's how it manifests itself.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously stand-up comedy brings a natural stress.
Yes.
Fight or flight, you know, adrenaline. But the problem with this was it was like inescapable for 2 or 3 days.
And you didn't know what it was or why it was happening. And it was scary.
Yeah. But it was literally like, what am I going to do with this? You know, like I couldn't sleep. Now, it was a stressful situation I was in. You know, I was talking about the HPV vaccine on this television series, and I was getting a lot of pushback from these groups. So it was like a mega stressful situation. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't so much that it was like, this is abnormal. The problem was that it was so familiar. Mm. And it was just the first time that I ever thought, oh, this can't be that normal.
But that was quite situational anxiety for you. Like, did it ease off when you moved away from that show?
Well, the intensity of that did. Yeah. Yes. However, it did make me aware that I live with what would be considered like high levels of stress in my body in relation to scenarios that aren't that stressful.
Yeah.
And I can get up to 90 pretty quick.
Yeah. It's like your threat system is sort of on alert all the time when there's nothing really threatening you.
Yes.
And that can become your norm, and we can become almost comfortable in discomfort and not even realize. Only when it gets to the point where it starts to really get in the way of your life are you like, hang on a second, is this normal or is this actually my default and it's not a good way to be? Because there is, like you say, like you do have lots of very positive anxiety in your life, and if you didn't have that fight or flight before you perform, you probably wouldn't be very good. And it helps you show up, and it's a kind of a call to action for your brain to get your shit together. But when that's happening off stage, in like very innocuous situations, then it's a problem.
Yeah. So do you, when you talk to people on your podcast, do a lot of people just put it down to like, I mean, I don't mean in terms of like, in terms of I guess a mental health context, do people put it down to this is something that has built up in me, or do people sort of put it down to perhaps like a learned behavior or a response to like a trauma earlier in their life?
There's a whole spectrum, and there's so many different kinds of anxiety and so many different reasons why people are feeling it. I think in this day and age, I know you spoke about this on your episode on the Des Bishop podcast, it's a word that gets bandied about a lot. And I think sometimes it can be used when really we just mean overwhelm, or like, I just had a stressful day.
Right.
And we think, oh, I'm suffering with anxiety. Like, I don't want to diminish anyone's anxiety, you know, you can call it what you want, but there's stress and overwhelm, which we can handle, which are going to come up in life. And then there's anxiety where you're not able to function. And there's a whole spectrum. So for people, it can be anything from their personality is maybe gravitated towards being an anxious person. Maybe they catastrophize, they think of the worst case scenario. Maybe hormonally, they just produce more adrenaline and cortisol than someone who's super, super chill. A lot of the time it will come from some event in the past, like a trauma that mightn't be a glaringly obvious trauma, but it could be something that if you were in a very vulnerable mental state and you experience something, say two people experience the same thing, right? And one person's in a vulnerable mental state and the other isn't. To that vulnerable person, it might actually lodge in the brain and make a little fear response.
And that becomes like a programmed in.
Yes. And that will come up later on again. So oftentimes people think their anxiety has come from nowhere, and they don't, because they don't know what the event was. But a lot of the time there isn't one thing you can go back to. For me anyway, it was a case of prolonged stress building up and up and up that I didn't address, that I didn't take seriously. And eventually, when you put that much pressure on the parts of your brain that are involved in that stress response, they just start to give way. And eventually, because you're not paying attention, your body cranks it up a notch. Like for you, you were obviously kept going through the experience of putting the show together. And eventually your body started to really crank it up with the pains and the aches, so that you'd take the message seriously and be like, hold on, I can't sustain this long term. So for me, what was really, I guess, so surprising for me was that I didn't know that stress can build up and turn into anxiety. I thought something really awful would have to happen. You know,
right.
I thought I couldn't justify it. All right, I have a great life. You know, I'm here in my house. I don't deserve to say that I have anxiety.
Right.
But I did. And that actually added more anxiety as well, because you feel stupid, or you feel like you start comparing yourself to everyone else. So there's so many different reasons why people have anxiety. And then there's can be something as simple as you just have too much caffeine in your diet, and
yes,
you're already quite a stimulated person, and then you're adding more stimulants to the mix. So like, obviously you're going to feel a little bit jittery and edgy. So yeah, it's a whole spectrum, but I think there is a difference, and we do have to be careful and mindful of saying things like, oh, I suffer with anxiety, when, you know, you just had a stressful day and that's okay.
Yes.
And you bounce back and you know what to do. And that's where I want everyone to be. I want everyone to be able to get to the point where they just, you know, we're going to experience stress and anxiety, but we can manage it, and then you won't fall off the cliff's edge, so to speak, which is what happened to me.
Right. Oh, so you had a, and I'm sure you've talked about it a gazillion times on your podcast,
yeah,
so we don't, you know, but you had like a kind of a moment of inability, yeah, to cope, sort of a thing.
Yeah. So in 2014, when I don't think anyone really was talking about anxiety, I think maybe Brezzy had started to talk about it a little bit.
There was no mental health in Ireland before Brezzy.
There was no, he's Mr. Mental Health. So thank you to him. And yeah, so it was, I mean, at the time, social media was just for putting out your best bits. You wouldn't have in any way shown any kind of vulnerability. And I just, everyone knows the story, but I changed jobs. For the sake of your listeners, I left. I was in entertainment.
Yeah, you can edit out your bit.
I'll edit out my bit. But when I met you, I was in entertainment.ie, and I,
yes,
worked my way up there. And then I sort of thought, oh, well, I've nowhere else to go from here, so I need to keep pushing myself. And then I went into a startup, and it was just not a good environment for,
yes,
me to be in. And I, same as you, from what you talked about when you were younger, it started with my stomach, as it always has done throughout my life. And I didn't feel well. I don't feel well. What is this? I've said this so many times, but I was as crazy as believing that, because I'm a north sider. I moved to the south side. I moved in with my boyfriend. And I thought, maybe it's the fucking tap water making me sick. I was so unwilling
to. Fluoride.
Yeah. I was like, no, maybe it is. So then I started brushing my teeth with like soda water. I was like paranoid that it's got to be something tangible. It can't be me. I refused to accept that I was just maybe not able to cope. And then it went worse and worse and worse, to the point that like I couldn't eat anything. I lost loads of weight. And then the anxiety came, and then it was panic attacks and not being able to sleep and those aches and pains that you have felt as well.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't get into work. I couldn't function. I couldn't be left alone. I didn't work for a couple of months. I got very, very depressed. I was crying all day, every day. I had severe panic. And it wasn't like, oh, what is this? Am I dying of something? I wanted something to blame. So if I went to the doctor and they said, oh, well, this is causing it, I would have been delighted for them to have found something, as awful as that sounds.
But you didn't go to the doctor.
No, I did. I did everything. I addressed it in every which way.
Right.
And it was like, you're fine. Everything looks fine. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me then? Because if nothing shows up on a scan, then it's just my mental health. And if your mental health is compromised, you feel like you're not in control. And that's scary to people. And that's where the stigma comes from, I think, because,
yeah,
physical health issues happen to you, but mental health, it is you.
Well, in the AA world, when we say, I'm fine, you're saying you're fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and erratic.
Yeah, I heard freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, from, I think that's from the old movie, The Italian Job.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the reboot of it, which wasn't very good. But yeah, so that was, I did fall off the edge, and I got really, really sick, and I had to go on medication, and I went to the complete end of the pit of despair with it, and felt like, what the fuck's wrong with me? Everyone else looks fine. No, you know, this is a joke. And then what I started out as anxiety brought on by stress and the new job became anxiety about what people would think about me, anxiety about how this would affect my relationship, because this was a new relationship and I had been all carefree and we were going out and I always, you know, had my makeup on, and suddenly I was a heap on the floor and I was like, save yourself. This is not what you signed up for. And he was like, but I want to be here. And I was like, no, this is not what you want. So it was, there was so many different things, like what was going to happen to my career, because I left my job and media in Ireland is so fickle and there's not that many opportunities.
Yeah, it's just a snowball.
Like a huge thing. Yeah. And just the fear of the fear, like, I can't believe I'm capable of this. I don't know how I'm going to get myself back together again. And am I the only person in the world feeling this way? Now I know, given how many people listen to my podcast and have bought the book, it is an insane amount of people who are suffering to the extent that I was,
yes.
Which is scary. I mean, we're really all living at this, like you say, this constant stress level, but so many people, they're not just like a functioning anxious person. They're not coping at all.
Yes. Yeah. So, because you listen to the thing, which you can ask me away, but
yeah,
I mean, the other thing that helped me, well, the other thing that made me kind of sad in a way, that the term, but the thing that I find positive about the term is it does label a certain way. It's a good label for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. Because like my mother was...
So sorry, that's the dog. That's going the dog. Bananas.
The dog has anxiety.
He's the most anxious dog in the world. He's afraid of his lead.
But all small dogs are like that.
Okay, let's hope he stops.
Yeah, but it's not really coming through.
Is it not?
No, okay. Not really. not a lot. Now I have a dog on my lap. It helps with my anxiety. Yeah. So, you know, my mom died since I made that podcast, you know, but she was like genuinely like quite crazy. She wasn't the worst mom, but she was a great woman, but she suffered on the like coping part of life. But of course, like there wasn't an ounce of...
And she wouldn't have identified it as that.
Well, absolutely she wouldn't have identified it at it, but nobody in our life would.
Yeah.
You know? So it was actually after my dad died, she, you know, we had like a period of time where we stopped talking or whatever. And she actually sort of was forced to do something about her ways, you know? Because there just comes a time where you just go, enough's enough, like, you know? And it was only then that she was just like saying, I suffer with anxiety. And I was just like, God, what a pity. That we didn't find this out.
I know, but that's the thing, like it's not a snowflake millennial generation issue. It's just that we now know what it is and we can identify it, and we're also not afraid. There's no stiff upper lip or shame around saying I'm struggling. Like my parents' generation, my grandparents, your parents, it was all there, but it was just, you get on with this, you don't air your dirty laundry in public, you have a drink to cope, you do whatever you can. So I think we might have more stressors, different kinds of stressors these days, such as social media or expecting too much of ourselves. And even for women, I think, who are, you know, obviously it's not a gendered issue, men and women both experience anxiety, but for women, we have more opportunity now than we ever have had.
Oh, so there's increased pressure.
So it's like, well, if you're not seizing everything and doing everything, then you're not, like, what about all the women who came before you who didn't have that chance? So I think there is probably different kinds of pressures now, but it was just as much an issue for your mom, just or probably her body just naturally produced stress responses.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I started to read about it and I saw all the, like, I mean, I'm not that up on the science. In fact, I haven't even, like, revised since that time, but I did quite a bit of research at that time. But my overwhelming thought at that time was, my God, I think my mother lived with this crap in her body her entire life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like she was 78 when she died, but she died from a lot of like, you know, and I don't know how these things manifest themselves in illness, but she died with like a lot of illnesses, like a lot. And I got to think, other than the smoking, which directly related to like lung cancer that she got, but it wasn't lung cancer that killed her. She had a lot of other stuff. And I have to feel like that amount of stuff running through your body for your whole life has to be debilitating.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it first of all, the stress hormone suppresses your immune system. It shuts it because you don't need to be functioning from an immunity perspective. It shuts down your digestive system or compromises it, because if you need to get into it, if you're in a fight or flight situation, you don't need your digestive system working. So everything is compromised in order for you to get out of the situation. And if that's happening chronically and you don't even notice it, your whole system is vulnerable all of the time then, and your sleep suffers with anxiety. And sleep, I'm reading a book at the moment called Why We Sleep, which is just mind-blowing about the effects that sleep has on every single biochemical reaction in our body. So I'm not surprised that people who have chronic stress or anxiety, eventually it starts to come out in other ways. I don't have any facts to back up, but I'm sure there's a correlation. There has to be.
Yeah, there absolutely has to be.
Yeah.
And so when I think, so let me tell you how I ended up sort of revisiting this, because I'm always saying to people like, oh, anxiety is like a new word, you know? So about 2 weeks ago, I was actually looking for my driver's license, my Irish driver's license. And I ended up going into like all these old bags of like documents and stuff. And I've kept like all my diary / comedy notebooks from the early part of my career. And every now and then when I'm looking for something, I encounter them, you know? So I just happened to open one up and I was looking through, you know, some of them are like jokes and some of them are just like November 19th, you know, 2001, you know, talking about my life. And in a few of them, I'm talking about like the levels of anxiety that I'm feeling. But of course, I'm not talking about it as I have anxiety because the word anxiety isn't a new word. Mm-hmm. But I was just kind of laughing at myself and I was like, God, in my mind, I feel like I only became aware of anxiety as a thing in like 2016. But in actual fact, it was there.
Yeah.
The awareness of being anxious a lot of the time was actually there for a long time. And also, the other thing that I remembered was when I first stopped, you know, I was a bad drinker and stuff. I stopped drinking and taking drugs in 1995. And I remember in the early days of the recovery process, I just remember having this moment where I wasn't anxious. And I remember like sharing it at the time, which was like, this is the first time that I don't have like a tightness in my chest. And I'm just not anxious. I used to use that word, but nobody then, like, and we're talking about like NA and AA meetings where like mental health, even though the word mental health isn't used, it's the language of the circle.
Yeah, it's a vulnerable open space.
But it wasn't language that, like, nobody would say, I suffer from similar amounts of anxiety. Some people might say, I know what you're talking about. You talk about being anxious all the time. But like, it wasn't like a thing where people went, yeah, that's...
It wasn't a thing in and of itself. It was related to something. Like if you were there from an AA perspective, it was because of that, or it was an offshoot of something else that you're going through. But I think now we sort of look to it as something that stands on its own, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you ever get clarity on where your anxiety originated from? Or was there an event, or was it just kind of there throughout your life growing up?
So because, you know, I stopped drinking in 95, I've done numerous times in my life, like therapy and like various different, you know, whatever the sort of like finding yourself exercise du jour was. Mm-hmm. I did it, you know, anything from like just normal like therapy or like group stuff to holotropic breath work, which was this experimental thing that was like had originated with LSD. But because they discovered that LSD is quite damaging, they tried to create the concept of an altered state, quote unquote, through breathing technique.
Okay.
Which I've noticed has actually come back now. And
the Wim Hof method?
The Wim Hof method sounds very like holotropic breath work, but this guy was like, he was a Polish guy. Anyway, long story short.
So you were open to different things.
I was always exploring. But, you know, it did always come back to like stress in my childhood. And like this one therapist, now that my mother's dead, I can dump all over her. And we had quite a good relationship at the end. But, you know, this one therapist guy that I had been visiting for quite a while was basically saying to me that like the mental torture that you were put through as a child is way worse than physical abuse. Mm. And he says he encounters it quite a bit. You know, this sense of just like growing up in a stressful situation. Now, obviously, it turns out my mother couldn't cope. But even though she would say I can't cope all the time, you know, she had her own struggles. But how that related to us as children was just like dancing around my mother's episodes of panic, you know?
Yeah.
And the panic was related to low stress situations in terms of how human beings, you know, notice a situation. You say, this shouldn't have been so stressful, right? And not that you become your parents, but now when I look back, as critical as I can be of my mom at times, when I look back, I think, yeah, but despite your ability to deal with high stress situations, which actually my mother was good at too. Mm. My mother was great at high stress situations because it was the only time she was normal. You know?
So she was comfortable in high stress probably.
Well, yeah, because she was at the right frequency for the scenario, you know? But I only make fun of her in that way because I completely identify in that myself, in that like, from recent scenarios like my mother's death, my father's illness, other mega stress situations in my life, you know, I'm very good at them. I'm actually almost like insanely calm during high stress situations. Yeah. but just like a simple thing, like 4 days before a corporate gig. Now, this is like just one of a gazillion examples, but corporate gigs are not really that stressful. They're not that different to my own job. But for some reason, like 4 days before a corporate comedy gig, I'll be miserable for 4 days.
Miserable or anxious?
Well, anxious, but the anxious, you
like,
know.
Will you be nervous about it? Will you feel like, I don't want to do this? Or yeah. Will you just feel low?
It'll just be like ruining my my normal life. Mm-hmm. You know?
And then do you panic about the fact that you're feeling panicky?
That's like the two mirrors facing each other. But I don't know if I would articulate it that way. I just like, all I do is I just go like, this is such a fucking pain in the ass that this is on me right now. Mm. You know, I think of it more like an inconvenience. Mm. Like I'd rather just not be worrying about it. And despite, because I can't, even the intellectual awareness of it doesn't get rid of it.
No.
Of course,
oh God,
I get distracted.
Yeah.
For an hour or something will come up. Yeah. You know?
Well, for me, the intellectual awareness of it, or like understanding what is happening, why it's happening, was a huge part of being able to like function again, and not just survive, but to thrive again and like really like enjoy life. But I have an approach in my book called the assess and address approach that I sort of created to help me navigate whenever anxiety came up. And the assess part is like, so understanding how anxiety works in the brain, understanding the chemicals and the hormones involved in the parts of your brain, understanding why humans feel it and how normal it is, and like how we've moved on in society and how we're still reacting to fear in the same way that we used to in hunter-gatherer times. However, the fear, the threats that we're facing these days are more like emotional threats. They're not always threats to our survival. It's going to be threats to your sense of self-worth or what people think of you or that kind of thing. So understanding all of that makes you be a little bit less like, you're such a fucking idiot, and it makes you kind of understand. And then you have to look at your own situation. So what's going on in my life right now? What are the vulnerability factors at play? So for you, I've got this gig coming up. I've got this thing that I don't really love doing, corporate gigs maybe, is what you're
feeling.
Yeah, I mean,
that's just one of...
But as an example, or for me, it could be I'm coming up to the deadline of my third book and I've got loads of other things that I have to get done. So like you take into account what's my picture look like right now, even though you're like, I'm fine, I'm coping, I'm fine. If you take a step back, or maybe you've like at the moment, like you have an issue with your sinuses, like all those little things compromise your ability. You're like to sort of rationalize and your executive function, which is your prefrontal cortex. And your prefrontal cortex, which is the really more modern part of your brain, is always kind of at war with your amygdala, which is the more primitive part of your brain, which feels fear. And that's like a child always firing off to all these threats. And your prefrontal cortex job is supposed to calm it down and say, listen, we're totally fine here, relax. But if you're stressed out or if you're compromised in any way, it's not as easy for your prefrontal cortex to do its job. So then the amygdala is left kind of in the driving seat, which is why we're reacting to things we normally wouldn't react badly to. And which is why it seems like it's come out of the blue, it hasn't, or why it seems like you can't cope with something you normally can cope with. So for me, understanding that and not thinking I'd just gone crazy, and knowing how common that is for everyone. And like for me, it manifests with anxiety.
Yeah, but that's why I'm here, because I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's literally why I contacted you, was because I was being lazy, really, because I knew that there must be some stuff behind it that I don't know yet.
And it's really simple stuff. Like, and I'm not an expert. I didn't go off and get a qualification in it. I was just so eager to understand it so that I could cope better. And the only way for me to do that was to get stuck in and treat it like almost like an assignment. And obviously I tried so many different things, from like what you did. Like I had these things plugged into my temples, but what was wrong with me at the time was I had a wrong idea about anxiety. I, because it hit me so bad and I was so ill with it, I thought of it as something to cure that like had taken over me. I thought of it like a virus, because it was a real 180. And because I didn't understand how stress can turn into anxiety, and I didn't understand how the brain works, I compared it to like paranormal activity, like this thing had just come and taken over me. I was possessed by anxiety, and when was it going to go? And everyone was like, just don't think that way and you'll be fine, and sure, what have you got to be anxious about? And I was like, I fucking know, or just breathe. And you're like, fuck off, like if I could just fucking breathe my way out of this, I would do it by now. And I was like again with the water thing, like I was trying to cure it. So I would go into, you know, a different treatment, and all these things that really prey on your vulnerability, especially coming from America where there's a lot of bullshit. And I would be on YouTube and it would be this person who looked like the most well-adjusted person in the world sitting there on a YouTube video saying, I used to not be able to function with anxiety, and then I did this one thing and I never felt it again. And if you just enter your bank details, yes, you'll unlock the secret. And I was like, okay. And then I would go and do these things thinking, believing the hype that this will cure it, or you can get rid of panic, or you can get rid of this.
They're all owned by Tony Robbins, just now. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
And then I would do, and it wouldn't work, obviously. And I'd feel 10 times worse. And then I would think, oh my God, am I so fucked up that I'm impervious to these things that work for other people? And I had it all wrong. Like, I remember once going to a particular therapy session. And this is what motivates me so much today, is to help people be wise of the bullshit and to understand how normal anxiety is, and it's not like a fucking paranormal possession to get rid of. And I went into this session, and it was very calming, as they all are. Like, all that's happening in so many of these different therapies is that you're reducing the cortisol and you're stimulating like nicer hormones, and you're getting yourself into a relaxed state. And anything that gets you into a relaxed state, as long as it's not induced by alcohol or drugs and it's not harming you, is a good thing for your anxiety. And the longer we can spend in those relaxed states, the better our resilience will be. So of course, when you're in the situation of doing a treatment or whatever, or getting someone's like massaging you, or, you know, Reiki or any of that stuff, you're going to feel super, super chilled. And he was like, you know, it should be just max one session and you should be fine. And I was like, amazing. And I walked out of there, and my mom had driven me. We were on our way down to Dingle, where they live. And it was like along the way. So we drove from Dublin, stopped off in Waterford where this guy was, did the session. I came out and I was like, it's gone. Like, I'm fine. I'm completely fine now. And that was just a really weird blip in my life, and I'm completely fine. And because my parents didn't have any awareness either, because they'd never addressed their mental health, it wasn't an issue. It was just, it probably was, but they wouldn't have even bothered to look at it.
Yes.
They were like, oh, okay, she's fine now. That's great. Because they had been minding me. I mean, I was 25 and I needed to be monitored all the time. Like, I was being taken care of. And suddenly they were like, that's great. So we had dinner, had a glass of wine. And I was just like, oh, I mean, it's just a new person again. This is amazing. Went to bed. And my mom was like, oh, I'll see you in the morning. And I was like, yeah. And then I was in bed being like, oh, it's gone. And then I was like, is it gone?
You started worrying?
I started, and it built and built and built, and it came. Of course it did, because I put myself under so much pressure not to feel it and think that it was gone, that if I felt one glimmer of a panicky or anxious feeling, I was like, oh, it's not fucking gone. You're completely broken. And then I plummeted so much more because of that. And that none of that would have happened if I had have understood how anxiety happens, and it's not something to get rid of. And to this day, like, I don't, with my book, I'm not saying this is not going to cure your anxiety, but I live my life pretty well despite it now, because I understand what it is and I manage it. And I know when those stressors are getting too much, and I see the train coming down the tracks and I get off before it hits me.
Mm.
And I know, and I'm wise to the bullshit that's out there. And I got so pissed off reading, I don't know if you've read Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now.
I mean, I've flicked through that in my life, but I've never like
fucking
read it.
Annoying. Because I was in such a desperate position and I was like looking for anything that would give me the answer. He just had the most crippling anxiety all through his life. And then one day he just decided to, he was like sitting down and looking at a tree or something, and enlightenment just washed over him. And he realized that it's all about being in the present moment. And then he never felt anxiety ever again in his life. And I'm sitting there fucking eyeballing a tree being like, come on, like, hit me.
Yeah.
And of course that doesn't fucking happen for normal people, because we have stress in our lives and it's okay.
I know, but everybody, I mean, whatever, that's like a fun thing to get into from a comedy perspective. Just all the charlatans that are flogging their wares, from the Tony Robbins to the Power of... And listen, I'm sure there are people listening that have got good stuff from those. I did a Tony Robbins workshop. And
How was it?
I took some positives from it. But the problem is, they're all selling... The bullshit that they're selling is that this thing, which is good for you for a day, is going to change your life forever.
Yeah.
It's going to make you richer. It's going to make you calm forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, as you know, it just doesn't work that way. As in, like, The Power of Now. I haven't read that properly, but in those early days of recovery, that was very much like a big book, you know, and all of staying in the present. It's eternal vigilance is the price of freedom, is like an NA quote.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
But like, that's a way more honest one.
Yes.
Which is basically like, yeah, do it every day.
Every single
meditate
day.
Every day or whatever, you know, like, because he's looking at a tree. He's just having like, he just had like a moment of clarity.
Yeah.
We all get them. Everybody gets a moment of clarity. But the problem is that that moment of clarity is just a moment in time. The Buddhists are way better at it because that was another thing I used to do, which is basically like they believe in the practice of non-attachment. Mm-hmm. The problem with Eckhart Tolle is he's saying, have this moment and then try to recapture this moment every time. Whereas in actual fact, all these moments just pass.
Yeah.
You know, the Buddhists say you practice of non-attachment, samsara, sin, whatever the fuck we're all obsessed with. None of it you get freedom from unless you look after this shit all the time.
Exactly. And I think shifting your mindset into it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it. It's your reaction to life, because stress. And actually, though, another thing that I found so helpful is this amazing doctorish woman called Kelly McGonigal. She did a TED talk, and she talked about stress and all these different studies and the upside of stress and how, okay, so we're all trying to live our lives without stress or without anxiety. And of course, if you try to do that, you're going to have more stress and anxiety in your life. And she referenced this study that basically proved that it's not the presence of stress in your body that matters. It's your perception of that presence of stress. So this group of people measured having no stress in their lives at all. And then there was people who had a lot of stress in their lives, but perceived it to be okay. And like, okay, stress is normal. And then there was people who had a lot of stress in their lives, but thought, oh fuck, I'm stressed all the time. This is so bad. And the people who had a lot of stress in their lives, but perceived it to be okay, were more likely to survive than the people who had no stress at all.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's not about, you can't go off to the Himalaya. Well, you can if you want to. Most of us can't realistically and give up a modern life. But it's obviously you don't want to be in a really horrible job and having all this stress and tell yourself it's fine. But we're going to have stresses in our lives, whether it's, you know, okay, maybe this week you've got a lot on, or maybe you're in the middle of a house move. And if you panic about that stress, and if I panic about the presence of anxiety instead of saying, okay, like, what's this trying to tell me? What do I need to look at? Then I'll actually react to it much better and I won't suffer as much. And it won't harm me, because anxiety is harmless unless you ignore it and it starts to affect your immune system and everything else. And it just starts to just run you into the ground if you don't address it.
It is good to know about the different parts of your brain and how they're.
Yeah.
Because I got to assume that my brain was trained a long time ago to hang out in that back section a lot more.
Yeah.
What did you call it? You said the front section.
Oh, amygdala. The prefrontal cortex and your amygdala. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been hanging in the amygdala like a lot of my life.
Mm.
You know, like even if I wrote a book about my dad, was nearly James Bond. But in the book, I talk about, and by the way, I'm not bringing up all these things to say I did all these things. It's just funny because I can look back at my perception of what was going on with my life.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I go, oh, another example of an awareness that I had without the language of knowing what was going on. So I have a little section joking about how I was working with this director when we were filming The Work Experience. And for a while, he didn't realize that when I said something was a disaster, I didn't really mean that it was a disaster, but it was a language that I picked up from my mother, which was something like, oh, the traffic's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I use that term all the time. Like,
they took you literally.
Yeah. And then after a while, he realized, oh, I realize it's not a disaster. It's just a word that you use to describe these low-level stress situations. Yeah. And I wrote it down as a thing of like, you don't realize when you're young that you're growing up with all this perception of life being very difficult when actually it's not that difficult.
No.
You know? But it does wear off on you. And like, I definitely still to this day, like I gave you corporate gig as an example, but just like renewing a driver's license.
Well, those little things.
Oh, fucking kill me.
Why?
Who knows?
But like, why? What is, okay, if you break that down, what is it that makes you feel bad about that? Is it just the menial task? Is it you just don't want to do it?
I don't have a why. If I had a why, I wouldn't even be fucking talking to you.
No.
No, I'm just, I don't know why. I'm just saying it just triggers a reaction in me, which is abnormal, and it kind of like makes it more difficult than it should be.
Okay.
Like, okay, so the last, I had to renew my American driver's license, which is very recent. And luckily now you can make an appointment. So I make an appointment in Riverhead, Long Island, which is further out, and it's always known to be way less packed than the DMV in New York. So I'm like, I'm just really stressed gathering up all these documents, but I'm doing it. But it's like, it's killing me,
okay.
But I'm doing it. So I get all the documents and like, I get there and it turns out that one of the documents is not the correct one. Now, a little bit of that has to do with the fact that it's insane that it's not the correct one, but let's not focus on that because that is definitely
their fault.
Yes, 100%. So then I have to like do it again, you know? And I it's like, I'm aware of it for ages. Now, I can't actually get the new document until I get back into Manhattan and get the document. And I do finally get it done. But like the relief when it was finally done was like way too much versus the event. And now I'm aware of it. Like that whole time I was like, look at this. This is...
You're reacting to it disproportionately badly.
Yeah, but like now I'm aware. So now I'm going like, fucking this is a pain in the ass. Mm.
And you mentioned going to the less busy DMV.
Well, everybody does that.
But is there anything to do with like being around crowds or anything?
Nah. I when people talk about the crowd anxiety and stuff like that, that's not like the thing.
Yeah.
It's actually
literally the thing.
It's the organization.
Mm. Would you yourself as an organized person?
Oh, I'm not an organized guy. I'm not OCD.
Yeah.
My anxiety manifests itself in the antithesis of OCD, which is thinking of organizing shit. Makes me very anxious, and eventually I do get it organized and I do get a bit of relief, but I have an overactive stress response to basic organization.
And do you think that it's just you're building it up in your head more than it really is?
Well, I think that's part of it. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And
have you had situations where you've thought, oh fuck, I have to do this thing, I don't want to, and you've done it and it's actually been fine, and then it's made you realize, okay, maybe...
Well, that's everything. That's all. That's all. But I say maybe next time, but the problem is that there is a physical reaction.
Yeah.
Which
I think the next time it happens, I mean, for me, CBT was a huge help, not just talking therapy, not just something relaxing, but a very practical approach to like it's your thoughts that are infecting your feelings and your behavior. So your thoughts are maybe, fuck's sake, I don't want to do this thing. Your feelings are feeling jittery. The behavior is you're going to make a mess of organizing it all. And then just this loop, this cycle loops, you need to get in at one level and kind of track those thoughts and then be like, okay, why are you thinking that this is all going to go tits up? And what actually, so then like kind of, it's like a thought record exercise. What's actually happening? Or if you think, you know, I'm going to fail at this thing, is that based on reality? Or, you know, you have to challenge the thoughts and go back to it again and again and just do these exercises.
But do you find that the intellectualizing helps?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Hugely. Because you have to keep...
Because I've done CBT before, by the way, but I never did it in relation to this specifically, as in it was in relation to like, other stuff, even though it all manifests itself in similar ways.
Yeah.
But I never went with the focus of here are certain things in my life that are causing me problems, because other things were back in those days.
Mm.
But, you know, nowadays, I guess, you know, you get older and you get more aware of what's going on for you. If I went back to somebody, it would definitely be, actually, I'm kind of just a little bit sick of these certain areas that are causing me.
For me, the reason I find CBT helpful is because it makes me stop and see which part of my brain is in the driving seat. So if I'm saying, what if, okay, I have to go and give this talk. I'm not good enough. I'm going to make a mess of it. Because I do give a lot of talks around anxiety now.
Which is, by the way, most people's number one fear.
Well, yes. Public like speaking. Completely rational and fair enough.
Yes.
So then I have to think, okay, well, what evidence is there to support that? And it's about then giving your prefrontal cortex a chance to step up and mediate those fears and worries and negative feelings. And it sounds really simple and silly and stupid sometimes, but it's, again, it's the kind of thing, like you mentioned earlier, like having to constantly look at your thoughts when you feel good and not just like as a crisis situation, and always think, okay, well, there's so many common mind traps with anxiety, such as catastrophizing, polarized thinking, all or nothing thinking, overgeneralizations, all these things that are just so part of our everyday life that when you start to label them, you're like, hold on, I'm doing that again. And that's going to give rise to an anxious feeling, and that feeling is going to influence a behavior such as me not wanting to go to this thing or whatever. And it just helps. It's again, it's probably hard for you because if you don't like being organized, it's basically organizing your thoughts.
It's not that I don't like being organized. It's just that I get stressed out in the organization process. You know, it's like a trigger.
And
I'm pretty sure I know where it comes from.
Well, can I ask you?
Well, yeah. I mean, our childhood was very stressful because my mother put... See, but I don't like blame.
Well, that's not blaming. I know it sounds, we can all say like we're a product of our environment, you know, but everyone's doing their best. Okay. But as a kid, there's so many things that happen that might seem innocuous that have a huge effect on you because your prefrontal cortex that I was talking about and your ability to rationalize and to think logically and laterally, that happens much later than your ability to form, your brain's ability to form a long-term memory. So your amygdala is reacting to things, say 7 or 8 or whatever, if you have a scary experience that's to you scary or very stressful, that will lodge in your brain and encode a memory and encode a stress response.
Yes.
But at that point, your ability to say, look, this is fine, there's no monster under the bed, that hasn't developed, that doesn't come till later. So in those intervening years, it's actually such a crucial time as a child when, for me, it was things like seeing my grandparents in a coffin when I was very frightened by it. So my fear response was really healthy, but my ability to rationalize wasn't there yet. And still to this day, I can kind of trace a lot of my anxiety back to those moments. So it...
Well, basically, getting organized in our house was very stressful.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily so.
And would you be punished if you weren't ready to go out the door? Kind of that kind of thing. Because that would probably make sense.
I mean, it was torturous. It was... You probably grew up in a calmer house than me, so I can tell by your reaction. No, I'm kidding. Until it got organized to the satisfaction of my mother would be carrying on as if it was the end of the world.
Okay, so you had to please your mother and nothing was ever good enough. This is not to sound critical of your mother, but it's just, that makes perfect sense to me, is that there's no amount of organizing you can do a good enough job to be praised
It wasn't really about praise. It was just about peace. You couldn't get peace.
Yeah.
You know? And eventually I think eventually I just learned to fucking just try to avoid that stress as much as possible.
Yeah.
And some would even say, you could go to another country at 14.
Yeah, but maybe because you did that at such a young age, you weren't quite ready or you hadn't fully matured, maybe you're still grappling with the idea that you're able to live your life on your own terms now, and that's bringing up a lot of anxiety for you.
I mean, there's any number of things. But I know that it's the trigger.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's one thing knowing where your anxiety comes from. It's another thing knowing what to do about it. So
that's why I'm talking to you.
Yeah. But what do you...
I'm going to go to other people. But I'm not giving you the job of being my cognitive behavioral therapist. I just was curious to talk to somebody who just has been a little bit more familiar with the language of tackling it. You know, because like I've tackled various different things, and particularly around like my childhood, I have had a lot of like, you know, a lot of progress in terms of like the trauma of childhood.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it just, to me, what I like about the concept of looking at it in terms of anxiety, quote unquote, is that actually for me, it's a framework that makes complete sense, that there's something physically going on in my body that doesn't really match the scenario.
Yeah, you know? And that it's not your fault.
Yeah, it also helps me to drop a little bit of the resentments. I mean, I dropped resentments against my mom to a large degree a long time ago, but it helps me to make sense of what she was doing, because my conversations with my mother later on in life was basically that she became aware, she had a horrific childhood herself, and for her, getting organized, like basically getting everything right, because her parents were such horrific alcoholics, was the only way that they could relax. So it was like, get my drunken mother to bed, get my drunken father to bed, get, like, you know, make sure that nothing was out of place so that there was no, like, uproar. And then once all that was done, then I could be okay, right? Mm-hmm. That was what was going on for my mom. And unfortunately, what I think that she didn't realize she was repeating was, she took every scenario in life as, once I get this done, I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. She's just putting out fires all the time.
But, like, constantly. But the reality was that she was creating fires to put out, and we grew up in a fucking inferno. Thank you for giving me that language. And a fucking smoke inhalation from the fucking fumes. So it helps me. It gives me, on one level, an understanding of what was going on for my mother. But obviously, on a more important level, it gives me an understanding of how much I still have a bit of that in myself today. Which is why, like, certain gig situations don't create a lot of stress for me. But, you know, ones that require, like, pre-thought do.
Okay, so maybe with the corporate thing, for example, if we go back to that, it's different because there is an element of, you know, they're paying you to be there to prep or something. And that's,
possibly,
that, again,
it's
that
just
requires...
certain ones just trigger me more. But I mean, like, you think it's important to find out exactly why, or do you think it's more important to actually just get, like, do you believe in being just a bit more generally centered and grounded so that this stuff that this stuff doesn't rise up?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, it's the assess and address approach. So it's coming at it from both angles. So not just always trying to put a plaster on it, but to understand why is huge. But it's not the be all and end all. You also have to get yourself to a point where you're not reacting to those things, or else you're much better able to cope with them. And that's where things like meditation, which, you know, people kind of roll their eyes at, but it just, there's so much, and I'm not great at it myself. Like, again, I'm a crisis meditator. It's something I if I'm feeling bad, I'm like, shit.
I'm a big fan, but I am also not a great practicer.
Yeah. And it's all those things. It's knowing that, you know, how long it takes for the stress levels to build up in your brain and tip you over into anxious mode. It's not as simple as identifying it and then being like, okay, I'm aware of it now.
Yeah,
it's gone.
I'm good.
It's going to take a while to bring all those things back. So for me, a really important thing is to take it away from yourself in the context of what's going on for you, but to look at the chemicals in your brain and know that, to have respect for them and to know that it's not, you have to kind of hack your brain almost and hack your body and do things. Like, it's not just about relaxing. It's about it's like you're bringing your cortisol down. And when you bring your cortisol down, you're able to think clearer, see clearer.
Yes.
It's not just about, as simple as it sounds, there actually is biochemical things happening. And that's all. If we can manage those interplay of hormones, then we can cope.
I know, which is really what I like about what delving into anxiety brings, is an awareness that that is part of it.
Yeah. And I think that's really empowering as well, because it means it's not just your fault, or it's not just, this is just the way I am. It's something that you can, like, people always say, like, you can rewire your brain. So, but understanding it in the first place, this is where you have to start. And then there's the lifestyle stuff too. So, I mean, it's all well and good to know what anxiety is, but if I stayed in that job situation, nothing was going to change at all. So you have to look at the lifestyle factors and also knowing the difference. For me, a big thing is to know the difference between your personality and your anxiety. So a question I would always ask myself,
oh, that's a good one,
is, okay, say something is coming up that's making me feel anxious. Is this something I would want to do if I had no anxiety at all? If the answer is no, then it's probably my personality talking. If the answer is yes, it's probably my anxiety and maybe something I should push through. But if the answer is no and it's my personality talking and I keep resisting that, I'm creating more tension. So,
but it's hard to be clear on which it is.
It is hard to be clear, but I just think it's being a little bit more kind to yourself and not thinking, you know, we all think, oh, we shouldn't be anxious people, we shouldn't be stressed out people. Like, it's okay if you are. It's okay if you don't like certain things. It's okay if I'm a perfectionist. It's okay if you're not particularly, like, into being organized.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to force yourself to be a different person. So maybe you actually need to, like, allow yourself to be that way, and it's okay, you know. For me, it's like not always trying to shove a square peg into a round hole, but to, like, make your anxiety work for you and work with yourself rather than always pushing against yourself. And that's, for me, was like a massive thing. So, like, for example, I'm not the kind of person that will do well with, you know, a hugely packed schedule. I very much charge inwardly by being by myself, or, you know, I'm such a home bird. So if I have loads of things on, I'm not great. Social anxiety sometimes gets me, especially like at press events. I was only talking about this on my social media a while ago, where, you know, when you're in a room full of people and you know loads of people, but not very well, and you're just having this just chit chat.
Oh, that gives me anxiety.
I think it gives most people anxiety. But for me, it's all these kind of surface level half conversations. And then I'm thinking, oh, do I sound like a fucking idiot there? What did I say? I'd rather know nobody and be in a crowd, or just be around a couple of people that I really know and trust. And I was really being very hard on myself, thinking, you need to get over this fucking social anxiety. I'm like, no, I don't. Like, it's not for me. I don't like those environments. That's okay. So I'm trying now to be like, if I know that it creates more anxiety for me to constantly force myself into these situations and to be out all the time draining myself, I'm going to suffer. So I'll, instead of thinking, oh, I'm a fucking loser because I want to stay at home all the time, you know, I just allow myself to like lean into my personality and be the way that I am. And like, I'm a big sleeper. If I don't get, you know, I used to think, oh, like I need to be only sleeping X amount of hours so I can be really productive. No, like I need 10 hours sleep, but I feel great.
I wish I could get 10 hours sleep.
You need to read that book, Why We Sleep. Oh my God, it's so good.
I'm an early going to bed, early rising guy. It's just my circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like, I'm not in a career that supports that.
Do you know what I found really interesting to learn about that is that if you go back to evolutionary times, when we were in tribes and we've always had to sleep, it's always been like a biological imperative. But if you're an early riser or a late riser, it depends on where your ancestor was and the shift of keeping watch for the safety of your tribe.
Is that right?
So yeah.
So they
can go back. Yeah. So basically, you would have naturally back then, if you were alive back then, you would have probably gone to bed and woken up and took over the shift of keeping watch when someone else went to bed. And then there's people in the middle, which I think I'm in the middle, who didn't really ever actually get stuck looking at it all, because I'm like kind of I'm a late riser and an early sleeper.
Because I always joke and say I have the body clock of a farmer and the working hours of a stripper.
Yeah.
But I definitely have a farmer's body clock.
Yeah, but again, that's another probably source of anxiety, is that like you don't want to force yourself into being a late riser and a late.
I'd love to be a fucking late riser. Yeah, I've been trying my whole bloody life.
But you're not. So maybe do more of the corporate gigs that get you out and done early in the morning.
Yeah, they're the worst.
Yeah.
No, but the other, sorry, that I, another thing I wanted to ask you about, which is another thing that made me realize that I, not that I'm not normal, but yeah, that I definitely have higher levels of anxiety than others, which was just a funny conversation in the water in West Hampton in Long Island this summer. And I was aware of it all summer. I was like holding on to scenarios of like interactions with people and just like fucking getting no peace from them in my head.
Yeah.
You know?
I get that.
Obsessed with them. And we're in the water one time and it was just some bullshit interaction while playing beach volleyball. And I know some people are probably listening to this being like, I'd love his fucking anxious life. It sounds fucking great. But anyway, I some stupid interaction. And like 3 hours later, we're in the water. Oh, you know, maybe it was 3 hours later, maybe it was the day before. But anyway, I was like imprisoned by the fucking like constant running of this.
So you just were playing a conversation, yeah, that you had with someone?
Yeah, I can't even remember exactly. But like I said to the guys I was in the water with, like, you know, I hope this thing was okay, whatever it was. And they were like, you're still fucking thinking about that?
Mm.
And I was like, yeah. And they were like, dude, you fucking worry too much. But the thing that was great about them saying that to me was just like, yeah, but this is all the time. These guys don't realize that, like,
yeah,
all these low-level interactions fucking run in my mind a lot.
I know.
Like, I worry about them a lot.
I think what helps me with that is really being quite blunt and saying, you know, we actually constantly overestimate how much people think about us and how much we matter. You know, people might react to something and be like, oh, there's Des, whatever. And then they're so wrapped up in their own shit that they're not thinking about it. And we're torturing ourselves thinking that we're torturing, affecting everyone.
I've used that very language.
Yeah, but it's like we all feel that and we're all guilty of it. But we're all, if you think about how much you think about, you know, we're all, you know, we all think about ourselves and we're all seeing everything from our own perspective, and how little you're thinking about the thing that someone else said to you for more than 5 minutes, then they're experiencing it the exact same way. So
I know,
I know it doesn't help. It doesn't make it like go away.
We know.
Yeah.
But it definitely doesn't, yeah, help. And I that's definitely another area.
Yeah.
Whether we put it in the bracket of anxiety or just like my areas of my life that I'm not content with.
Mm.
That is another one that I feel I suffer with more than others.
Well, that is that when I mentioned the common mind traps associated with anxiety, that's personalization. And that's, so that is again something with CBT to be like, oh, I'm doing that again. That is the kind of behavior that gives rise to anxiety, where I'm thinking, okay, if someone comes into a room in a bad mood, or if when I was working in an office and if someone was in it, I'd be like, what have I done? It's my fault. And it's, again, it's not going to make it go away. But the more you bring it back to be like, oh, I'm personalizing again, the more you can separate reality from the narrative in your head.
So you call that personalizing?
Personalization.
It's good. You got a lot of language.
I got a lot of big words.
Catastrophizing.
Yeah.
Is one that I'm taking from this conversation. Personalization.
Putting out fires.
Well, that was great. The Inferno. That's going into my show.
Is it? I better get a fucking
shout out.
Doing
a show about my mom, you know?
Oh, really?
Called Mia Mama. It's the other reason why I'm tackling all this stuff head on, because it's all like super... super current, you know. Yeah. Lost my mom. It's all out there, you know. So catastrophizing, personalization. Yeah, the putting out fire stuff, I like. That's like a nice metaphor. But that's more just like,
yeah,
that's good for the TED Talk, you know. But
I'll
for
give
actual,
you one of my books.
No, but for, yeah, I'll read your book. But actually just like in terms of like actual practical advice for life, stuff like that is good to know that these are, you know, because what if these things have like labels, even though some people complain about labeling.
Yeah.
But if these things have labels, it makes you realize that like it's common.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It helps you to feel less alone, and it helps you to make sense of things. And like that has been the most important thing for me, to get to a point of owning my anxiety. And I think if you can get there, you're more than halfway
Isn't
there.
Isn't that what your book is called?
Yeah.
Owning My Anxiety, or it's
called Owning It, Your Bullshit-Free Guide to Living with Anxiety. But the American and Canadian version is called Own It, Make Your Anxiety Work for You, because they have a fatigue with curse words, apparently, in America. They changed it.
Yeah, although Own It, Make Your Anxiety Work for You is fine, too.
Yeah.
Like anxiety is like a biofuel.
Yeah.
like the methane from slurry can be turned into fuel. So your anxiety can be a fuel.
Yeah.
Well, I do think that my anxiety is a fuel. It's
100%.
Like driven me to want to succeed everybody.
But it makes you probably overthink. It makes you be very creative, very productive, you know, produce the shows that you do, and has given you the career that you've had.
Yeah, yeah.
And will
yeah.
continue to have. I mean, sometimes, and also it helps me to learn that, you know, people with high anxiety levels typically are more intelligent, and we have very vivid imaginations, and we're very creative people. And like that goes hand in hand, you know, like they always say, like, the tortured artist. It's so textbook, but it's fucking true.
Yeah. And the other thing I like about all this is because, you know, when I first got clean, sober, I was very much in the world of the language of mental health, even though we didn't call it mental health. We called it like spirituality or whatever. Mm. But it was really just, and what I like about the fact that all this mental health stuff has become so public is actually so much of it is very much like that similar language, but it kind of makes it accessible for everybody. And we always used to joke in the early days of recovery, because we all thought we were fucking unique, you know, because we had our shit, whatever it is. Everybody's got their own shit, right? Manifested itself in alcoholism and drug addiction. But, you know, we used to call other people like normal people that just don't understand. But in actual fact, what we didn't realize is that ours manifested itself in alcoholism and drug addiction, but everybody's shit is manifesting itself in different ways. And everybody needs to fucking check themselves.
I'd love to ask you before we wrap up, like, what do you think needs to happen for more men to feel comfortable to talk about their mental health?
Well, I mean, I think it's changing quite quickly anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't really know. I never really actually thought that with this particular thing, because I think a lot about masculinity, and I was actually, for a while, I was thinking about trying to put together like a show about masculinity and modern aspects of masculinity. I think it's just tied into that whole thing of just men need to realize that they just need to be honest about their emotions. It's kind of weird for me because, like I said, I was thrust into this world when I was young of people saying you need to be honest about your emotions, don't hide from who you are, all this type of stuff. So I guess I'm not the best person to ask how do we need to be better at men being honest about it, because I kind of like was in a world where that was normal. And in actual fact, if you had any criticism of those fellowships in those early years, was there was hardly any fucking women in them.
Really?
Yeah, and probably some women didn't even feel safe there. It's just a bunch of guys fucking going on about how fucked up they used to be, like, you know. So I was actually in a world where like there was loads of men being like, you need to be honest about how you're feeling about that. You know, it was almost like you would get shamed if you weren't being honest about your emotions. Yeah. Like, where do you think that's coming from? Like, you know, that's like my early 20s was like a bunch of...
Okay, there were your formative years.
My early 20s was a bunch of like hardcore Dublin heroin addicts being like, you know, I think that's coming from your childhood, man. You need to fucking look into that. So You know, so I just think it's
so basically you're saying I need to have like owning it for dicks or something.
No, you need to be have like, you know, well, actually own it, you know, how I turned my anxiety into strength. You have to turn it like, yeah, you say like, how I turned my anxiety into a six pack and a bigger dick. How my anxiety made my dick huge. No, I'm
That's
joking.
That's going to be my next one.
I actually don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like all the conversation. Like I had a funny thought the other day because I used to have this joke about how people say, oh, you're crying like a girl. And I would say, I'm crying like a man. But actually I had a thought recently, which was people say you're crying like a girl. What does that actually mean? And it means you're crying in public.
Yeah.
Because women are comfortable crying in public and men aren't, right? So I just think there is a move, you know, based on a sort of a reaction to quote-unquote toxic masculinity. There is a move to tackle the aspects of masculinity or the aspects of traditional masculinity or what we associated with masculinity. There is a move to tackle those. And one of them is definitely men being stoic, men being afraid to show their emotions. And the negative repercussions of that have been violence against women. You know, so you can look at it in terms of how it's a positive benefit for our society. But in terms of like selling it to men, I guess it's basically just more and more men being public and saying, yo, I there were aspects of my life which you may or may not identify with that were causing me problems. I fucking tackled them head on and my life couldn't be better now. You know?
What are you most proud of?
As a human?
Yeah.
I actually don't know what I'm most proud of. Well, actually, to be honest, I'm quite the survivor, really, you know, like I had that kind of like a little awkward childhood. And then I left America when I was 14 for a number of reasons, but all of them were to really get away from my discomfort, really, you know. Now, it saved me, quote unquote, in that it gave me like this very unique life. But like, you can't say that there weren't negative repercussions from like half raising yourself from the age of 14, even though I was in boarding school.
Yeah.
You know, but like...
Yeah, but you did that. You half raised yourself.
Yeah, on your own. Yeah, so basically because I raised myself and I actually had testicular cancer when I was 24 and I had, you know, like I had like a weird life. Like I'm happy that I managed to like function throughout it. So yeah, on one level, I'm proud of that. But on the flip side, you know, I would prefer to be, have like an easier time with like, you know, relationships and coping with certain aspects of my life. Like I would have preferred to have, that's the joke I have in my show, which is I kind of wish somebody had told me your mother has anxiety and then she would have taken some Xanax and we would have had a normal childhood. But then I wouldn't be standing here in front of a bunch of fucking strangers talking about my shit.
No, you wouldn't. You would have been far too well adjusted.
Yes, I know. So I guess I'm proud of the fact that I've turned all that negative stuff into positives, but I don't really think of that. I am probably most proud of like the fact that like I got clean and sober when I was young.
Yeah, these are huge
and I managed
things.
To help, you know, like, and I did manage to like help a lot of people at that time, you know.
Yeah.
That's it. Thank you. I mean, that's a lot.
Thank you so much for joining me and thank you for having me on yours.
But really, I just wanted you to grill me.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Did you feel grilled enough?
Perfect. Okay. I was ideal. Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.